This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward. Thank you for joining us. We're bringing you a wall-to-wall show today with both local, state, and national news nuggets. So I will begin by acknowledging our wonderful sponsors. The Marketplace, since 1980, your go-to for breakfast and lunch, and of course, a full spectrum of catering options. That is The Marketplace, restaurant and catering. And We the People Declare, a citizen organization formed to watchdog the village of Pinehurst in Greater Moore County. Check out We the People Declare online. Want to remind you that our February 14th program will feature a one-on-one with a decorated military hero and Green Beret General Jerry Boykin, who has a fascinating military career to tell us about, and that'll be on our program on February 14th, which is also, of course, Valentine's Day. How special. Now, coming up later in the program, we will be talking to two candidates for the Moore County Board of Education, the school board, running in the primary. The primary season is underway, believe it or not. We just got the new year started, but early voting begins on February 12, and Election Day is March 3rd. That'll be the primary Election Day. And there are two at-large seats coming open on the school board. There are four acknowledged conservative Republicans running for those two seats. We've already shared with you conversations with Jim Peterson and David Norris. And today you will hear from Don Zalaki, Coach Z, as he is best known, and Olivia Oxendine. That's coming up later in the big show. Okay, folks, public enemy number one. You were waiting and salivating for me to get to that, and here we are. It turns out that public enemy number one, after all these many years, is going to be what we always suspected it would be, which is the Georgia Board of Elections and all of its government officials connected to that, and the 2020 presidential election. We are now closing in on being able to confirm the massive fraudulent operation attendant to that election in 2020, which, of course, was part of the overall scheme to ensure that Donald Trump was not reelected after his first term, and that Sleepy Joe Biden and his regime would be thrust into power. And we are now, because of the proactivity of our Cash Patel FBI, just in the past few days, we have action on the ground outside of Atlanta, where warrants have been issued, and as the week was concluding, FBI agents were moving in, looking for evidence to confirm what we have always suspected about 2020. And one of the people who was in the heart of that battle in 2020 is our very own local election integrity expert and friend of this show, Cleta Mitchell. Play clip one.
Cleta Mitchell, can you read us? Do you have the search warrant? Can you actually read it to us, ma'am?
I do. I'm going to tell you what the search warrant covers. These are the records that are particular things to be seized. I love that word. All records relating to violations of Title 52 United States Code, Section 207.01, which is the Federal Election Records Act. And So all physical ballots from the 2020 general election, including but not limited to absentee ballots, every type of ballot, whether cast, spoiled, provisional, etc., all tabulator tapes for every voting machine used in Fulton County, including but not limited to the zero tapes. Those are the tapes that are supposed to say, we ran this test and there were zero ballots tabulated at the opening of the polls. Closing tapes, now mind you, these are all fraudulent. We think that the ones that they have presented are fraudulent. That's one of the things you need to know. But all the opening tapes, closing tapes, and any other tabulator tape from any voting machine that was utilized in the general election in Fulton County in 2020, all the ballot images, because we know that there were ballot images that were destroyed for hundreds of thousands of ballots in Fulton County that came in absentee ballots that mysteriously appeared after November 4th of 2020, the day after the general election.
Okay, there you have it. So, of course, this is a developing story. And, you know, after waiting lo these many 5 years plus, however long it takes to bring to light what happened in November of 2020, we should let that process play itself out. Well, as we do every week, we're going to talk about public embarrassment number one. There are just too many candidates for this week, so we didn't exclude any of the most obvious choices. They are all tied into, as you might expect, the ongoing situation in Minnesota, particularly in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Twin Cities, and all dealing with the false outrage that the left is trying to spin up in the aftermath of a crazy person interfering with Immigration and Customs Enforcement activity on the ground, which resulted in the individual, the now famous emergency room nurse, Mr. Pretty, losing his life after being shot by ICE agents up there in Chile, Minneapolis. There's a lot of outrage attached to this. One thing that you might find interesting, because I certainly did, we've been subjected here in this community to these No Kings protesters. We don't know what they mean by No Kings, but because we don't have any, but that's what they call themselves. They have a policy which, had the two people in Minneapolis adhered to it, they'd be alive right now. Here's what it says. A core principle behind all No Kings events is a commitment to nonviolent action. We expect all participants to seek to de-escalate any potential confrontation with those with whom we disagree. Weapons of any kind, including those legally permitted, should not be brought to events. So, if they had followed the guidance of their own mothership, none of these casualties in Minneapolis would have occurred. The most embarrassing of the and revolting people on our list this week are led by this deranged now former nurse with the Virginia Commonwealth University Health System. Let's play clip two.
Get on Tinder, get on Hinge, find these guys. They're around. They're a nice agent. Bring some X-Lax and put it in their drinks. Get them sick. Get the poison ivy oak water, and I'm going to put it into a water gun. Aim for faces. All the medical providers, grab some syringes with needles on the end. Have them full of saline or succinylcholine, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Her initial comment there, which was a little garbled, she was talking about women should go to the bars and restaurants where the ICE agents are spending time in their off hours to, quote unquote, get them sick by spiking their beverages or whatever else they may come up with. So that was what she was calling for there. And of course, now she's out of a job, as well she should be. And hopefully she's a little bit less out of her mind as time goes by. Up in Philadelphia, they have a district attorney up there who he agrees with the nurse from Virginia that you should use a very aggressive tactics when it comes to ICE agents. Let's play clip three.
This is a small bunch of wannabe Nazis. That's what they are. In a country of 350 million, we outnumber them. If we have to hunt you down the way they hunted down Nazis for decades, we will find your identities. We will find you. We will achieve justice. And
you know, I didn't realize that there were this many mentally deranged people among us in these United States. But this goes beyond, you know, we kind of joke about Trump derangement syndrome, but this goes well beyond that. And if you really step back and look at what all of this activity is in terms of going into these cities and arresting illegal migrants who have criminal records, who are capable of vicious, murderous acts. This is what we're trying to do here through the federal agents that are being stationed in these cities. There's something wrong with these folks who are willing to accept the collateral damage of rapes and murders in order to let these illegals continue to roam free and to be kind of left alone by ICE agents. It's really remarkable. The derangement continued over there on the show you might probably have never watched if you're smart, called The View on ABC. And, you know, the famous View with Joy, who's joyless, and Sunny, who's not very sunny, and of course, all the other cast of characters up there. They've been on that show for like 20 years. I don't know how in the world they stay on the air. They've got another sidekick now. Her name is Sarah Haynes. And now that they've all justified this violence against ICE, wouldn't you know it, the ladies of The View are now huge proponents of none other than the Second Amendment, which they usually dismiss as an amendment that should be abolished because all it does is encourage violence and allow a bunch of rednecks to go out hunting with their rifles. But now they're all in on the Second Amendment. Let's play clip four.
And the birth of the Second Amendment was about the people being able to protect themselves in case the government was to turn on
it's
them.
It's for this very
exact thing. Yes. So exactly what's happening right now, that's not, I'm guessing he carries this wherever he goes, whatever, but this is a prime example of what people were allowed to protect themselves against, was to carry that weapon. So it wasn't something you even saw him handle, which is the perfect example to prove the point.
Hey, we got a little mood music there at the end. That's always a nice bonus. I'm all for carrying concealed carry and legal possession of firearms and all of those things. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend taking those firearms along when you're going to disrupt the activities of federal agents. That's just not really a good idea under any circumstances. If any of you folks have a little free time on your hands this weekend, I would direct you to the Apple Music app and search for something called the Somali Waltz. It is a little tune that was put together by an artist named Natasha Owens, and it's about 2 minutes and 10 seconds, and it takes you to Mogadishu, Minnesota. And it's a lyrical summation of all the Somalian fraud that's been going on up there, which really is what we should be talking about more than the other idiots on the streets interfering with our ICE agents. The Somali Waltz, check that out. I strongly recommend it. Now, what is it about people who work in the medical field, and God bless them, the nurses and the doctors and the technicians, you know, generally, just like with teachers, we respect and admire these people, and as we do law enforcement. But there's something about people in the medical profession when it comes to deviant behavior. They seem to want to celebrate people like this Alex Preddy up in Minnesota. The other night in Durham, up the road, there was to have been a meeting of this nurses union, I guess for lack of a better term, a nurses union, NNU, National Nurses United. The meeting, however, was postponed because one of the members decided that it would be better to have the fellow union folks skip the meeting, and instead they organized a vigil for this Pretty up in Minnesota, and they took to the streets of Durham with several hundred people out on the streets to honor this person they say was murdered by federal agents. So, you know, the next time you're being treated at a medical facility or a hospital or whatever, you know, you might want to think twice about letting your guard down, because some of these people in the medical profession are a little unhinged. I hate to have to say that, but their behavior demonstrates it. I mean, look at how there were several nurses and other people in the medical profession celebrating the murder of Charlie Kirk last September. There are several viral clips from that tragic period of time where you had the same kind of unhinged behavior. You can't really make it up. So as I mentioned a few moments ago, we've lost sight of the point of ICE deployment to our various cities where illegal immigrants have been roaming free thanks to, oh, I don't know, 15 or 20 million that came across a wide open border during the Biden regime, and really even before that. I mean, even before that, going dating back to the days of Obama. The thing about the Obama administration is that they were very proactive in deporting these people. And when they were deporting illegal immigrants, nobody said a word. It wasn't a news item. It was just, oh, Obama wants to deport bad guys? Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Thank you, Mr. President. Well, now we have Donald J. Trump doing the same thing. And somehow they're all Maryland dads who deserve to remain in this country regardless of any crimes they may have committed. The first crime being, of course, entering the country illegally. That's why it's called illegal and not legal. And God bless the many legal immigrants in this country. They are the hardworking folks who run the small businesses and who embrace the American dream that makes this country great. They are part of the economic engine of this country, rivaled by no other country in the world. So, of course, lost in all of this discussion, unfortunately, is that America has always been a wonderful, welcoming place for people who legally come here from other countries. And that will continue, I'm sure. Let's go over to, there's a show on Fox News. Some of you may watch it. It's called The Five, because it's on at five, and there's five people on the panel. So for you Democrats following along at home, it's kind of a, you know, a play on words. Greg Gutfeld, who is one of the great cultural and political observers of our times, as well as being a hilarious individual to boot, he had heard just about enough about mourning the situation involving the two vigilantes in Minneapolis, and he went off on one of the lefties on the Five. Play clip five.
We had dozens of deaths where you didn't say shit. Jocelyn Nungery, Lakin Riley, Rachel Morin, Molly Tibbetts. I'm going to just do it because this is just, I can't believe that we're still talking about this stuff. Here's three pages of women who have been murdered by illegal aliens in the last like 7 or 8 years. The 7 or 8 years that we have been here talking about this and mocked over it. When we showed the embassy, showed the border being overrun, and people laughed at us. And now you're here. It's like you're the maid trying to clean up a mess and somebody there is staring at you going, oh, you got to clean it up better. No, you made the mess. This is the Democrat Party's mess that we are trying to clean up. And you're saying, wow, these ICE agents are using terrible language. We don't care. I'm bored by this. I'm absolutely bored by this. I'm bored by the Nazi stuff. I'm bored by the concerned people in the media. They were not concerned when innocent women were raped and murdered. They didn't care about the 50 who died when they were incarcerated under Obama. They didn't care about the 27 or 30 that were shot got under Obama. But now they care now. You deserve no attention on this. You deserve no credibility on this. It's actually comical because here's my feeling. It seems like you're ready for another one. You had good, that went for a couple of weeks. You had this guy, went for a week or so. You're going to need a third one. This is what this is about.
Yeah, and let's hope he's wrong about that. But there are going to be individuals who are motivated and inspired by people like this nurse in Minnesota, who now, of course, we've seen in the past couple of days this video captured from 11 days prior to his confrontation with the agents. 11 days prior, he had a similar run-in, and he took his big old foot that normally is probably in his mouth, and he took that big old foot and kicked out a rear tail light on one of their SUVs, which got him, roughed up pretty good, and apparently he suffered a fractured rib as a result of that altercation. But it just keeps escalating like crazy, and I hope that that parents are talking to their children about what they're seeing there and giving them some clarity that this kind of unhinged lunacy is not the norm, not part of the true American experience that we have, I guess I would say, taken for granted for too many years. Of course, we've seen violence in the streets before. You go back to the 60s and the civil rights movement and the Watts riots in Los Angeles and on it goes. But we're just going through another phase, and let's hope that as the economic picture continues to improve in this country, the warm embrace of prosperity will bring everybody back to a more, shall we say, level-headed and harmonious state of existence. Okay, folks, so now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have our conversations with school board candidates Coach Z and Olivia Oxendine coming right up.
Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
Joining us now is Olivia Oxendine, a candidate for one of two at-large seats on the Moore County Board of Education. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So for those of us who have monitored the county school board in recent years, we know that it's sometimes a contentious place, sometimes a little emotional, and sometimes a very inspirational place because, good decisions are made from time to time. So with that all being said, please tell us a little bit about what is motivating you to mount this campaign and run for one of these seats.
Well, it kind of fits into, I suppose, my life narrative, being a very much a career seasoned educator over five decades from the early 70s until 2024 when I retired at UNC Pembroke as a faculty member, professor. So serving at the state level on the State Board of Education, we come across issues and programs and projects and wonderful ideas. And then my work as a professor and faculty at UNCP, preparing future principals, reading about ideas and wanting to get them started and knowing that you can at the state level, but it's not as rich as it is at the local level. So I'm excited to think about policies and implementation of programs that look at the school level, how to improve a school improvement plan at the school level. It's one thing to read about it in a research article or hear it discussed at State Board on a broad kind of macro level, but it's quite another thing to be able to work with a particular district or a school within a district or a couple and see what we can do to tighten up a school improvement plan to begin closing achievement gaps. So it's getting me, I suppose, from the 30,000 feet level to the kind of the micro scale level in the weeds, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have quite broad perspectives here, given your career in education as a teacher and a professor. But also, you've spent a good number of years on the State Board of Education. And, you know, a lot of the frustrations that the county level school boards have flow from the state board, because the state board has a lot of influence, shall we say.
Yes.
What have you taken away from all these years on a State Board of Education that leans ideologically very left? What is your takeaway from that, and how will you apply that to your perspective as a potential school board member?
Well, it's interesting because at the local level, the fingers are pointed to Raleigh. So now that I've been at the State Board of Education for 13 years, we tend, and the Department of Public Instruction, we govern that, we tend to point the finger. There's a lot of finger pointing. So sometimes we point the finger over to across the street on Jones Street to the General Assembly. And I would say that if there is any reason for finger pointing, it is because education is very complex. Laws are complex. State board members may interpret one way, the Department of Public Instruction another. By the time it gets to a district office and out to a school, there's all kind of interpretations of. So a lot of it is just not enough. And it's not that we don't, everybody tries to improve communication and to explain things well. But as far as, go back to your statement about the left-leaning components.
Of the State Board of Education. And, you know, there seems to be an acceptance that there's a certain mediocrity that is okay within our educational system in terms of reading and math fundamentals and proficiency mm-hmm. at the certain key age groups. Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, I'm just wondering, you see that there are problems with reading and math, which are mm-hmm. fundamental to the future of a child and their ability to become productive citizens. You can't go to every household and see if the parents are helping the kid with their homework. You really can't even go to the classrooms all the time to see if the teacher is teaching in compliance. Mm-hmm. So as a school board member, everybody has the same goal, but what is the actual practical steps that you can take as a school board member to effect change?
Let's talk about it from my perspective. I'm a firm believer in not lowering standards, and sometimes that makes me unpopular. I believe with it, and I don't want to go into the weeds on this, but I'll just use this as a typical example. There's a lot of debate currently around the school report card formula that is 80-20, 80% of the variables are placed on proficiency, let's say in reading, and proficiency is nothing more than being on grade level. So if a student is in the fifth grade, then we want the student to be reading on the fifth grade, if not above that. So the 80% is skewed in that direction, which is good. But there's been a debate for years since I have been on the state board to reduce that to something other than 80%. 20% is placed on growth, and that means that the teacher has a fifth grade student reading on the first grade level, and now the student is reading on the second grade level. That's growth, but that's still not where the student needs to be. So I have really argued, let's not change the 80-20. Let's stay with the 80-20, because if you start playing around with lowering that weight, something psychological happens. It may not even be voiced, but it's, oh, well, now I can focus on growth a little bit more than proficiency. And proficiency is where we want the students. Mm-hmm. So I am a firm believer in holding firm on high standards. It doesn't make me popular. But that is the only way we're going to move the needle in terms of closing achievement gaps, for instance. And we have gaps in reading. We have, strangely but wonderfully, we don't have gaps in science. And that's heavy reading on the EOG, EOC. But the students do well in science, but they struggle in reading. So, yes. So what do you do at the school level when you have let's say 50% of the students are far from proficiency, grade level in reading? It's hard work. This is why I'm saying it's going to be real exciting. There are maybe three schools in the county that are not where they need to be in terms of, wide gaps in reading and math. Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting to work with those principals, look at their school improvement plans, look at the goals they've set. Are teachers aware of, do they know how to monitor those goals? Are they tracking the goals? Do they have really good objectives that are tied to, it could be weekly assessments to make sure. If you look at the assessments and assess frequently, pay attention to the outcomes, and then do strategies to improve. Over time and hard work, we're going to see those gaps begin to shrink. Long answer to your question.
Another, I think, important role of a school board generally and its individual members specifically is that they are stewards of a lot of taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. And in the coming years, with new schools in dire need of construction in our community, there's going to be a lot of fiscal decisions made with a lot of zeros in the in the figure there, in the bottom line. How do you view that role as a school board member, the fiscal stewardship? Because, there's a school of thought that the more money you throw at a problem, the better results you're going to get, even though that's often never the case.
No.
So tell us a little bit about how you view that important role as a school board member.
Actually, last night I had planned to answer my question along that track, but I changed the course of that question in my answer. An important role of a school board member is to be aware of today, but really keep an eye on the future. And one of the first questions I will ask when I become a member of the board is to look at the long-range planning. Long-range planning has several chapters, but one of those chapters has to do with facilities long-term. You have to stay in touch with demographic researchers. Once a year, a school board should meet with experts wherever they are, and spend an entire day or 2 days looking at population growth, bringing in the Chamber of Commerce, businesses, and say, where are we headed in Moore County over the next 25 years? And you have experts out there who can do that. So it is a major responsibility. You do not a board, but, unfortunately, this tends to be the pattern, and I'm certainly not pointing fingers. School boards in general wait until the last minute to begin thinking about tomorrow. And, oh my goodness, we have schools 5 miles or on the other side of the county that are dilapidated, falling apart. You have to have someone monitoring that yearly. And that responsibility should be assigned to a buildings and grounds and a facility committee. And a member or a couple of members from the school board should serve on that committee. So it's just keeping your eye on what needs to be watched today. That's the way one of the best ways you can be a steward is to be vigilant. Mm-hmm. And being vigilant is having a very smart subcommittee that keeps watch over those kind of areas of the school.
It's very clear that the next seating of the coming school board after this election cycle will be continuing to discuss and hopefully find solutions to the huge gaps in security coverage of our schools. Mm-hmm. We have 13 elementary schools mm-hmm. that open their doors every day without one armed guard. And it's sad to say that you need that in every elementary school, but in fact you do. There are churches in our community that don't hold services without an armed guard on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. you're going to be faced with how to solve this problem once and for all. Either we're going to shut down the Moore County Schools Police Department and go with the sheriff deputies off duty, or we're going to have to find some other way to attract qualified guards to join our internal force. What is your view of how this ends?
Well, I think the SRO employee certainly needs to be armed. Otherwise, I would see that individual as almost a friendly mentor to students or part of the school counseling department. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not, doing a poo-poo on that.
Right.
That's important, too. But the SRO needs to be armed. I'm doing a little bit of research on the background, trying to wrap my head around that issue. I need to know. I know that Moore County at one time had their own police force, and I suppose the people retired or they went to other jobs. I don't know why they haven't been able to find those. Maybe there's a shortage. Maybe it's a funding issue. Maybe it's a salary issue that they can't recruit.
Well, there is funding. There is funding, and they have raised the salary levels, but the problem is finding the law enforcement personnel who are trained to the level that they need to be qualified to come on board. And once they get that level of training, not to go too into the weeds, but they tend not to want to work for a school security system. They want to go to work for a sheriff's department or a municipal police department or the state.
Because of, I'm sure, salary and benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah, so yeah. It's a conundrum.
It is absolutely nothing but that. I did just some research on the separation pay that I think the former superintendent did get. Maybe reducing the number of years that service to Moore County from 10 years to 8 years. And that seemed to be a recruitment piece right there to attract them to be SROs. And one way was to, when they're ready to separate, and they would get some kind of separation adjustment until they were age 62 and qualified. So there's some thinking around it, but more thinking is going to have to be done.
And in the short time we have left with Olivia Oxendine, candidate for Moore County School Board, from your point of view, is technology improving our ability to educate our children, or is it becoming a distraction and a hindrance?
I would say that we need to do a lot of research. School board members need to spend some time reading The Digital Delusion, which is a bestseller today. And it goes into it fascinating research that looks back 30 years in terms of the promise, the big tech out in Silicon Valley and other places, Route 42 through Boston, promised educators, and they were sold a bill of goods on this is going to improve achievement. It's going to be the magic we need to make kids smarter, and all it has done is caused probably a surge in mental health issues. In the book, the author talks, just one example, the author talks about the generation today, younger than the Gen X, are far less cognitively less strong than their parents or grandparents. It is something the school board is going to have to, we're going to have to reduce FaceTime on digital devices.
I think there's a lot of agreement on that. Mm-hmm. Olivia, thank you very much for joining us
today. Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And we wish you all the best with your forthcoming campaign.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And joining us now is none other than Coach Z.
Well, thank you for letting me be here today, Steve.
Good morning, Coach. And you're very welcome. And I'm glad you came in. We are talking to one of the candidates for the Moore County Board of Education. You may recall his name because he's run for this one of these seats before. So, Coach, I guess the obvious question, because anybody who's ever watched or attended a school board meeting knows that they can be sometimes contentious and, or if not that, kind of tedious. So why are you running for a seat on the Moore County Board of Education?
Well, I have been in education for 44 years. I have served as a math teacher and a coach in my 44-year career, and in all honesty, Steve, it has been a privilege and an honor to be a teacher because you and a coach because you get to make an impact on kids' lives. The last 10 years, I've been here in Moore County. I taught 8 years at Pinecrest High School and am currently teaching at Sandhills Christian, Classical Christian, and I've been doing that for the last 2 years, and I'm only part-time there. There are some things that are really important to me in this race. Number one is safety, and number two is education of our children. And to me, this one of the priorities of a school board should be the safety of our children. And currently, right now, as you know, that over half of our schools do not have an armed security guard on campus. So that is a concern because as a teacher, I've been in it. I've been actually where you're in school and you have discipline issues and things of this nature. And but here's the issue. One of the things that armed security at each campus, why is it important? Because it acts as a deterrent to kids that want to bring, you know, and do harm to schools. In fact, a lot of the school shootings that you've dealt with in the past, they look at, oh, this school doesn't have armed security. This one does. So they choose the one that doesn't.
Of course.
And being a teacher at Pinecrest, and I'm not going to disclose information on this topic, but I mean on the teacher or whatever, but there have been a teacher discovered a hit list in her classroom. There has been a gun been brought to school. And and of course, we had that incident that happened at Pinecrest.
Yes.
So safety to me is a major priority. Now, they currently right now, they brought in a new, we used to do, we had a security system before, Active Defender, but now they've given them a mobile device that can notify immediately
law enforcement,
them, assistant principals,
them meaning teachers.
Yes, yeah. Teachers. And now they can, and it automatically they know where it's at and they can get there. Now, so here's what happens. The number one individuals that usually are involved in like breaking up a fight, first of all, your teachers, because mm-hmm. they're located close proximity. So then you have administrators that get involved, and then you have your security SRO officers that come involved. And they're not there last because they don't want to be. It's because you're on a big campus.
Right.
And so the best way to prevent issues happening is to make sure that you have good supervision in your schools.
But would you advocate, and we'll get to the second part of your motivation in a moment, what would your solution be? Would you advocate for just more pay for our own Moore County Schools Police Department, which exists now? Or would you advocate for finally doing what seems to be the obvious solution, which is to coordinate with the Sheriff's Department and do what they're kind of talking about now, which is to bring in off-duty sheriff's deputies to work in these schools? What is the solution?
Well, when you look at this, the first role of the school board is to supervise or be the overseer of our school corporation. So when I look at this situation, why don't we have armed security at every campus? Is it money? And from what I have been informed, that there have been $300,000, and if I could be incorrect, that was not spent on SROs. That's what has been told to me. So, and I've talked to former SROs and current SROs, and here's the situation that you're in with that, is that number one, they're on a 10-month contract. So that's why they probably get less pay than a 12-month police officer. Mm-hmm. But here's my comment. You've been at school events, correct? They have to be there at football games. They have to be there at basketball games. They need to be there at graduation. They probably need to be there at prom. And I brought that up. Why aren't they paid for those extra hours to help them compensate? And here is my question. If Moore County Schools is not able to fulfill their obligation of having a complete force where they have armed security at every school, then we need to look at alternative measures.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned your long career in education and coaching, and that is really an important part of what you bring to this candidacy for school board. But given the fact that we are seeing increasingly that public education in some parts of the country has been failing our kids, really, what would your role, do you think, as a school board member be to address some of the problems that we have with getting students up to a proficiency in reading and math, which is really where the big gaping problem is? What is the role of a school board member, do you think, in trying to address those issues?
I want to go back. My first 34 years of teaching, I taught in Indiana. My last 15 was at a school called Whitco High School. And I served both under a liberal principal and a conservative principal that was a coach. Under our liberal principal with liberal ideas, we were a D school.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't an achieving school. Now, when this new teacher came in, he was a former coach, he was a principal, he was a former teacher, and when he came in as our principal, you know what the number one thing he did? He changed our culture. The faculty did not change. He changed the way the faculty viewed education. And so what we did is we put in programs, and I'm speaking strictly of math. We put in programs that we put in an extra, like a study period for our math kids that were low achieving kids. So we went from a 60% passing rate to over an 80% passing rate in math by simply giving the kids, identifying their weaknesses in their math skills, and then giving them extra help to raise their math ability. And so, sometimes people think, well, you just got to pour money in. Not always.
No.
Sometimes you just need to work smarter and more efficiently and be able to address the problems that are in your school. Why are we achieving, And I would agree with you that when you look at education as a whole, by third grade, if a kid is reading below level at that time, he is going to struggle.
Definitely, that's the key.
And so one of the things that you have to focus on is drilling the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic, at the early ages, so they have a good foundation of skills that will lead them to success later on in life.
Now, everybody that's running for school board now in the primary, which, by the way, early voting begins on February 12, and Election Day is March 3rd. That's worth keeping in mind. Also, just a reminder that we are talking to Coach Z, who is a candidate for one of the at-large seats on the Moore County Board of Education. Now, you mentioned the culture, and all of you are running for these two seats right now at a time when Moore County Schools is in the process of identifying and ultimately hiring a new superintendent. So you, as candidates, probably aren't going to have a chance to control that outcome. So when you let's say you're elected to the board, you have to work with whoever is the superintendent at that time. So what role can you play in influencing the superintendent? And by the way, reminding that person that he or she works for the board, not the other way around.
And I agree with you. And I just want to go back to one thing that you made a comment of. As a school board, what can we do to help improve our schools? Number one is you have to hire dedicated, qualified teachers that are effective in the classroom. That's number one. Who does that hiring? The school principal. So it is imperative that we hire principals that are strong leadership, that understand what it takes to be to turn around schools that are underperforming, or to even raise the expectation of schools that are performing well, but we want to take them to the next level. And you made a great comment here. What is the role of the school board? The superintendent works for the school board. The school board does not work for the superintendent. So we are to put policies in place that make our schools or give our schools a chance to be successful.
And the other important role of the school board member, which I think is often overlooked but bears discussion, is that you are the stewards of taxpayer dollars, which flow in from the state and the county to fund everything that makes public education possible. In the coming years, one of the big issues for the school board will be the need to build new schools, particularly a high school. What is your view on new schools? Should there be the sky's the limit, build the best gold-plated schools money can buy? Or is there a more fiscally conservative approach, do you think?
Well, here's the key. Whose money are we dealing with, Steve? The taxpayer.
Correct.
The taxpayer's money. So we need to be fiscally responsible with the taxpayer money and to be as efficient as we can with spending that money. Now, here's the situation that we have currently. And I've talked to several people about this. Okay, we have two schools that are currently overcrowded, Union Pines and Pinecrest. Okay, so, and your question is, what do we need to do? Okay, so you have options. Do we renovate and look at the cost factor of renovating and look at the structure? Because, I mean, this sounds silly, but Pinecrest High School is made out of concrete. So the erosion factor in that building, how long is it going to be able to maintain itself if we do renovation? Okay, you have Union Pines also, and then you have Northmore. And Northmore is not overcrowded, but those two are. So do we want to look at, A, renovating Union Pines, Pinecrest, or B, still renovating Parsh and then looking at building a new high school and possibly in the future a new middle school? We don't have overcrowding right now in our elementaries because of you have charter schools, you have private schools, you have home schools. And so that has not been a problem at the elementary level. But here's the thing. And you need a 5 to 10 year plan on what we're going to do with building and renovations. And that should be constantly upkept. And again, here's the thing that you want to do. It's not my decision. It should be the community.
Correct.
It should be, you know, your local government authorities. And those should all be put together to come up with the solution for what we are facing in the future.
Because we all saw what happened when the current school board arbitrarily selected a piece of land for a Carthage Elementary School and stroked a check to buy the land and didn't really bother to tell a lot of people. Coach Z, we thank you very much for joining us today and wish you all the best in your endeavors as a candidate for Moore County Board of Education. Thanks for coming in.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.